We are on Mem Tes Amud Beis. The last little piece here that we're going to start with is really finishing the previous Gemara, because the previous Gemara got involved with this topic of the Shisin, is what they're referred to. So just for those of you that may not have listened to the recording from the previous Amud, the wine and the water was poured into these two little bowls that were on the top of the Mizbeach, and they went down into some kind of pipes, but whatever. They went down in these things called shisen. And there was a machlokas in the Gemara if the shisen went down to the tahom, to the depths of the earth, or not. So the last opinion, which is the bottom of Mem Tes Amud Aleph, so there the Gemara has a little dot, six lines up. Tanya of Elizabeth Tzadik, Lul Katnai ben Kevash Lemizbeah. There was a small chamber between the ramp and the Mizbeah. It doesn't really mean like a chamber anyone would go into, but it means to say there was like a space. And once every 70 years, the Pirchei Kahuna. You guys ever heard of Pirchei? Pirchei is like these little kids' groups on Shabbos. They call it Pirchei, you know? Heard of Pirchei? So Pirchei Kahuna means a little Kohen Kinderlach. The young Kohanim would go down there, because who else is going to go down there? And they would collect the congealed... Well, I didn't even know wine did that. But apparently wine congeals. And it looked like these fig cakes from your days where you learned Bava Metziah. If you remember those old days in fifth grade or whatever, you started learning Gemara. You started learning Eil Metziah Shaloh, Eil Chayav HaHachriz. These you keep. These he has to announce. Yeush, Yeush Shalom Midas. Does this bring any trepidation to you?
Yeah, that was the best.
Why did it start with that? It's a good question.
Yeah, why does every issue start the same?
I didn't start with that.
Like, you didn't?
I started with Kriyat Shema.
No, like sixth grade.
It's an ancient tradition. So they would collect these congealed wine packets that looked like these fig cakes. In any case, what's the point? The point is that the Gemara makes it sound like, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, the Shisin certainly did not go down to the depths of the earth. They went down to the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, and so they collected over there. So once every 70 years or whatever, so somebody, Pirchei Kahuna, would have to go clean it up. Kind of like someone's bedroom. Anyway, once every 70 years, you know, clean it up. Anyway, so, yeah. So Mem Tes Amud Beis, the Gemara kind of comes back to that. Four lines from the top, there's a dot. It says, Kiman, Azlo Hadisnan. So we have this machlokas, Rabbanan and Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik. Did the Shisin go all the way down to the depths of the earth? Or no, they just went down to the floor. So who does this follow? We have a Mishnah. Nesachim Batchila Ma'ilin Bohen. Initially, what's called the Nesachim, right? Nesachim means the wine libations. So the wine that was going to be poured onto the Mizbeach, before it's poured, Mo'alin Bohen. Who knows what Me'ila is? Me'ila is the code word for the prohibition to get any kind of benefit from things that belong to the Beis HaMikdash. So if you can picture Achashverosh. Achashverosh. Anyway. So, guys, I'm old. Mikalim Shonim. According to the Medrash, Achashverosh dressed in the Big Day Kahuna, drank from kosos that belonged to the Beis HaMikdash. Anytime you wear the clothing of the Kohanim, you're not a Kohen, or it's not the time, or doubts of the Beis HaMikdash, etc. A person uses a kos from the Beis HaMikdash. Those are examples where no loss is actually brought to any of the items, right? You wear it, there's a difference, something happened to it. But nonetheless, it's considered to be forbidden benefit from objects that belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Kal v'chomer, if you go ahead and you drink some wine that was hektesh for the Beis HaMikdash, it's going to be used for the libations or whatever else, so kal v'chomer, that's considered to be a forbidden benefit, you're actually consuming it, and it's an actual loss to the Beis HaMikdash, yeah? It's a form of stealing. But either way, whether it causes a loss or it's just a benefit, is prohibited, and that is called me'ila. Before the wine is poured onto the Mizbeach, mo'alin bohen, that means one would violate an iser me'ila. Yeah, that's what molin means. One would violate Nesar Mila. Yardu l'shisen, once they went down to the shisen, which again is those pipe, the pathway that it would go down wherever it would go down to, either to the depths of the earth, or it went down just to the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. Ein molin behen, once it goes down to the shisen, it no longer is possible to violate the Isra Me'ila. Why is that? So we'll see in the Gemara, the basic principle is that once something is used for the purpose for which it's supposed to be used in the Beis HaMikdash, so then it's no longer possible to violate Isra Me'ila. It's done. You used it. It's done. Even though it belongs to Beis HaMikdash, like what do you mean? You'd think that it would be always Shayach HaMe'ila. No. Once you use it, called Nasa Mitzvaso, its mitzvah has been accomplished, and now it no longer can have a violation of Isra Me'ila.
So something like
you did
on
where like you have to
constantly wear it, can't
ever
be used.
Right.
But something that's like a
one-time
use could be
correct.
Used.
Very good. Good point. So according to that Mishnah, what do you think? You think that Mishnah is more in accordance with the opinion of the Rabbanan that the Shisen go down to the depths of the earth? More in the opinion of Rav Ben Tzadok, who also goes down to the floor of the Beis HaMikdash? Why? Well, where are you going to get it from? Who's going to crawl down to the depths of the earth and retrieve the wine? Like, why would anyone need to say in a Mishnah that once you use it, it's not a violation of Me'ila? How are you going to get it? Lemra, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. So say that that's in accordance with Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, the Rabbanan, because they have the opinion of the Rabbanan, and after a little time, the wine went down to the depths of the earth. I feel it, so the Gemara says, no, feel the Rabbanan, with the Iklit. Maybe someone, you know, caught it on the way down. You know, could be. Someone could catch it. So you may need to know that halacha in a case where a person decided to catch the wine before it went all the way down to the depths of the earth. Okay, that's called
doche.
What?
How does someone catch it?
Container. Yeah, you put something down there.
Where would they be?
Well, that's a good question. According to Rabbanan, was there also some sort of space between the kevesh and the mizbeach that theoretically you could catch it? Because that's what the Gemara said, according to Elazar ben Tzadok, that's where the Pirkei Kuna would go down and collect the congealed wine. So does everyone agree that space was there? They just disagree, like what it was for. But it sounds like it's at least possible somehow to catch it, to collect it. Vigita Amri, those that say, Leim Rabbanan, even the Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. We have another reason to explain, it could be the opinion of the Rabbanan, even though it went down to the depths. The E, was Rabbi Elazar, because it was the opinion of Rabbi Elazar that it did not go down to the depths. Then they still have their Kedusha. What? Why do they still have their Kedusha? Because we said the Pirkei Kohuna go down there and collect them. What do they do with them? When they find them. What does it say? Uboyan was surfing Uso, Kedusha! They have to burn it! Why? Apparently, so has Kedusha, right? Oh, so how could the price, how could our Mishnah be really rhetoric? Because Rabbi Elazar holds, congealed wine still maintains his Kedusha, but we're saying it doesn't. So it can't be his opinion, right? Oh, good point. Good point! You want to say the field tamer, Rabbi Elazar? No, you could say even according to that, still you're not going to violate Isra Me'ila. How could that be? Because even though there's a principle, there's a rule, there's a halacha, you have to burn it for whatever reason, but still, it's not possible to violate the Isra Me'ila. In other words, we're splitting hairs at this point, and saying there is some sort of reason why you have to burn it, but it wouldn't be an Isra Me'ila to utilize it because there's a principle that we started with that there's no such thing as Nasis Mitzvah, so its mitzvah has been accomplished, and it's still a problem of Me'ila. Once the mitzvah has been accomplished, there's no such thing as Me'ila anymore. Okay, so that belongs to the previous sugya. Now the Gemara goes on to, it's basically an agadita, a lot of psukim, a lot of drashas, a lot of not so halachic points. So the Gemara starts with this. Amar Rish Lakish, Bizman Shem Anaskin Yayin Lagavi Mizbeah. At the time when they would pour the wine on top of the Mizbeah, well, they don't really pour it on top of the Mizbeah, but that's the location, they pour it into these two bowls, right? Pokekin Eses Shisen, they would stop up, they would put like a cork in to these pathways that it would go down. The Kaimash and Emar to fulfill that which it says, but Kodesh Aseh, Nesech Sheikhar La Hashem. Because the Pasuk says they would do libations with holiness. It was a libation of, I don't know, inebriation to Hashem. What? Whatever that Pasuk means, what does it have to do with stopping up the Shisin so that the wine would gather on the Mizbeach? What? My mashma. Good question. We're asked the same question. How do you see that? How is that implied in the pasuk? Amar Baba Sheikhar. Sheikhar, Mar Hebrew means beer, you know. Sheikhar, quote unquote, Lashon Shesia is a language of drinking. Okay. Lashon Sevia, a language of being satiated. Lashon Chikros, and a language of being inebriated. So what? Amar Baba Shmamina. Kisava inish chamra mi garoine sava. You hear from here that when a person is satiated with wine, he's satiated with his throat. What's going on? Sounds like the idea is that we're pouring it in a way where there's like a, you know, gulp, 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 you know, but it doesn't go down like all at once. It's like kind of like, you know, hanging out a little bit and you gulp it all down in a big gulp. So that's what the Gemara is saying, is that here's an interesting principle. You can do some research when you get a chance. Maybe you shouldn't. That when a person feels satiated from drinking wine, according to Rashi, pushed on the Gemara, is that a person only feels satiated from wine when he drinks it in big gulps. But if he like sips it, he never really gets full. Okay. I'm a Rebbe. It's from Rabbanan. Dilin Apish Lechamra. If you have a Talmud Chacham and he's drinking wine but he doesn't have too much of it, Ligma Gimue. He should swallow it in big gulps. Because then it'll fill him up. Rava, akasa, debrachasa, agmegmue, and Rava on a coast, debrachasa, of bracha, coastal bracha, right? After someone benches on a coast, yeah? You say, Rava, sign of Arich, and you have a coast. Or you have Sheva bracha, you have a coast. There are a lot of situations where we have wine where there's a coastal bracha. At a bris milah. A lot of situations where we have a coastal bracha. So Rava, whenever he would drink from a coastal bracha, Agama Gemue. He would gulp it. Now, it's a little strange, because why did Rava need to feel filled up from a coast shel bracha? So, probably doesn't mean that. It means that he wanted to show that he really loved it. And since that's, I guess, a way that shows that, like, normally you wouldn't be allowed to do something like this, right? We try to educate ourselves and our children. Eat properly, you know? Don't lick that off the table. You put it in a cup, you know? Like, don't do that. So, but nonetheless, apparently when it comes to kosher bracha, to demonstrate that it's like so chashav, it's something like, oh, it's a kosher bracha. Normal wine, you would drink a normal person, but apparently kosher bracha, he wanted to show. This was like, oh, bracha. So he used to like swallow it as if he was starving and devouring it, something like that. Darash Rava, Rava said a drasha. My dichsev, what does it mean when it's written? Vayafu pamayif anolayim bas nadiv. Shir hashirim. Hey, we just read this. Anybody hear that on Shabbos? Shir hashirim on Shabbos? Yeah, we just read this. Pasuk says, how beautiful are your feet in shoes, daughter of a nadiv. Nadiv is like a modern Hebrew name, right? Nadiv means like nadiv libo, a person who's generously donating, you know? So, how beautiful are your feet and shoes, you daughter of a generous one. What in the world is that supposed to mean? So, this is Rava's drasha. Mayafu pa'amosein shel Yisrael. How beautiful are the steps of Jews. Bishasha olin laregel. At the time that they go up to Yerushalayim for the regel, for the holiday. Pesach Shavuot Sukkot. Bas nadiv, daughter of the generous one? What's Bas Nadiv? Bita shel Avraham Avinu, the daughter of Avraham Avinu, Shanikra Nadiv. He was called a Nadiv. Why was he more generous in his donation or sacrificing of himself or something? What do you mean? Shenemar Nadive Amim Ne'esafu, that those who are the most donating or giving of nations, they gather together. Am Elikei Avraham, the nation of the God of Avraham. Why all of a sudden, when the Jews are referred to as the most dedicated or giving of themselves, does it have to go back to Avram Avinu? Is something about Avram Avinu, he gave of himself more than others or something? Okay, Avram, okay, Yitzchak, but Yaakov, it says the God of Avram and not Yitzchak or Yaakov. Elo, okay, Avraham, the reason why it's referred to in that context is the God of Avraham, Shahet Techila Legerim, because he was the first person that was actually like a, so to speak, a convert. And of the whole world where there was no recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so he totally gave himself up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was the first gear. And so that's how the Gemara's Rav is interpreting the word Nadiv over here, is that when Kalali started going up on Aliyah L'Regel, so it's like relating it all back to Avraham Avinu, to the very beginning, to the one that accepted a Kaddish Baruch Hu in the world, and in the end of a lot of other trips, a lot of other stories, the end of the story is that all of these people are making Aliyah L'Regel, but it all really began with a dedication and sacrifice of Avraham Avinu to discover a Kaddish Baruch Hu and dedicate himself to a Kaddish Baruch Hu when it was not clear at all. Tanan Rei Rav Anan, the house, the Beis Medrash of Rav Anan taught. Anybody know who Rav Anan was?
The guy that stole the sea.
The what?
Wait, wait,
Rav
the
Anan. No. That's Onan. This is Rav Anan in the times of the Gemara. The Tana. Rav Anan, so he famously learned with Eliyahu HaNavi and wrote a book called Tana de Eliyahu. So you could learn this. It's broken up by parshios. That's what I try to do every Motzei Shabbos. My Malava Mak, I learned Tana de Eliyahu, broken up by Parsha. So Eliyahu HaNavi used to learn Mechavrusa with Rav Anan until something happened. Rav Anan had a case. He was a dayan, right? He was a great rav, one of the gedolim. So, and he was a judge. And a case came before him that he couldn't judge. So he sent it to another court, saying, you know, please adjudicate it, you know, instead of me. What happened was that they took that to mean, oh, this is of great import, and they kind of put it ahead of other cases. And because it put it ahead of other cases, the people that had to wait, you know, got like a little offended and upset and whatever. And that ended up being a problem because it went back. Whose fault was it? It was Anan's fault. I guess he could have sent a message saying, listen, you know, don't put it ahead of other things, but, you know, I can't adjudicate this anymore. Could you please do it? And he failed to do that, and whatever. So it was considered to be his fault, maybe a certain degree of arrogance or something, that he didn't work it out properly. So Eliyahu HaNavi stopped learning with him. Whew, can you imagine? You got like a chavrus Eliyahu HaNavi, and all of a sudden, like, you know, you messed up in your midos, and now the Rebbe says, we're finished with you. Ooh. So he did tshuva, and from then on, Eliyahu HaNavi would learn with him, but not face to face. He had to make a mechitza between him and Eliyahu HaNavi, and he would continue to teach him, but not face to face. So they say he sat in some kind of box or whatever it was. But if you ever learn Tana de Eliyahu, which is quoted a lot in the Gemara, it says Tana de Eliyahu, right? We learn from the house of Eliyahu. So that there are two sections. There's called Eliyahu Rabba and the Tana de Eliyahu Zuta. Rabba means great, Zuta means little. So Eliyahu Rabba is when they used to learn together face to face, and Eliyahu Zuta is afterwards when you wouldn't learn, you know, behind the Amachitza. But this is the famous Rav Anan. Tana de Rav Anan, we learn from the house of Rav Anan. Madisif, what does it mean when the Pasuk says Chamukei Yerechayech? You know, we spoke about this in the recordings in the past, that, well, here you have your fancy Gemaras, you have, it's the same pasuk we're discussing from Shir Shirim, Mayafu Pamayach Banalai Masnadiv, how beautiful are your footsteps or your feet in shoes, daughter of what we're saying is Avraham Avinu. The pasuk goes on to say, Chamukei Yerechayech, that you have these, I don't know, with the Pasha translation, again, Shir Shirim, you know, is like all a metaphor. Everything's a metaphor. So the literal translation is, I don't know, you have these really nice thighs. They're like jewels that a craftsman would make. What is that? What is that supposed to mean? Chamuki Yerechai. Your thighs. Lama Nimshol Divrei Torah Ki Yorech. So it's a reference to the words of Torah. How beautiful are the words of Torah? They're like, big fat thighs? I don't know. What is that supposed to mean? Why is the Torah couched in the term of thighs? Loi Marlecha comes to teach you my yarech b'seiser after Torah b'seiser. Just like a thigh is supposed to be hidden away, right? Even a miniskirt covers a thigh, right? So just like a thigh is supposed to be covered and hidden away like a secret, so the words of Torah also are supposed to be seiser. What does that mean? Interesting, right? It's really interesting. I would have thought this is talking about the secrets of the Torah. That one I would understand. You shouldn't, you know, go be, you know, we don't start spouting Kabbalah in public, you know? But it's not talking about Sisrei Torah, it appears. It's talking about just Torah in general. So it seems like the Gemara is just trying to say that in general there is a value that Torah should be something that's not like popular culture. It's not like it's just something that's supposed to be treated like it's just like, oh yeah, you know, blah, 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 blah. But it has to be with a certain kavod, and a certain kavod means that it's learned, you know, in the proper place, the proper time. It's not just something that gets exposed to anyone, anytime, just for any reason. It has to be treated with a certain kavod. That seems to be the idea. And the Gemara goes on this topic and says, "V'hainu d'amar Rabbi Elazar ma'idasib." This is what Rabbi Elazar said. What does it mean when the pasuk says, "Higi lecha adam matoy," that he told to you, man, what is good? Hashem told you what's good. Ma Hashem derish mimcha. And what does God want from you? Ki ma'asos mishpat, you should do justice. Va'avas chesed, and you should love chesed. Va'hatznei aleches im eloikecha. And you should walk, your approach, your attitude, your perspective should be with tznius. And with a tznius, with a certain privacy, you should go with God. So what the Gemara interprets this? Asas mishpat, that you should do justice. Zadin, that means justice. Meaning when a person has a court case, there's some sort of something needs to be adjudicated, so that has to be done properly. Va'abas chesed, and love of chesed, in quotation marks. You know what chesed means? You have any idea what chesed, what it means? We should translate it as like gemulus. Chesed is like loving kindness, you know? But you know, the Torah says that you're not allowed to sleep with your sister. Because it's chesed. So how do you interpret that? It means it's giving, right? It's like overwhelming giving. Like giving without what? Restraint. You know, just like just giving without restraint, I think is the way to say it. There's a way to give too much, and it becomes dangerous, it becomes bad, and it becomes misplaced. But chesed means just going above and beyond the boundaries, above and beyond the rules. That's chesed. So what's avas chesed? So in the pasuk it refers to gemilus chesedim. It means to go above and beyond and to help people. They may not necessarily deserve it, or maybe it's not tit for tat what they did for you, but gemilus chesed, okay, you should love that. What's about tznei alechasim alekecha? You should go with tznius with Hashem. Zu etzas hameis fachnasas kala. Where it says it refers to levaya, right? Escorting a body to its resting place and escorting a kala to her chuppah. Okay, interesting. Why is that referred to as having tznius? Those are two very public activities.
Don't they cover their face?
It's also true. The kala covers her face. And certainly the mace is also covered. I don't know if you want to compare it that way. But those are two very public things. V'ledvarim kal v'chomer. It's a kal v'chomer. If just like, or what if things that the normal manner to do it is in public, right? You escort a funeral, right? A funeral procession is obviously very, very public. And a hachnasas kala, even though you're right, she's covering her face, but it's very public. You do that in public. Amra Torah, tznei aleches. And the Torah is saying those things have to be done with a tznius, to whatever degree they can be done with tznius, you know? It means it doesn't become a big show. You don't have the elephants march the kala down, you know? But you do it properly. You do it with a tznius. Tznius doesn't mean just private, but it also means it's done properly, you know? Not incredibly ostentatiously, but it's public. But it's done what's the right way to say it? I keep saying the word proper. What word would you use? Dignified. In a dignified manner. Dvarim shedarkan la'asayisim b'tzina. Something which the normal way to do it is with a certain privacy and dignity. So how much more so? It must be done in that way. Even when it comes to learning Torah. But learning Torah also should be something that's done in a dignified manner. If we wanted to, we would expand on this idea a little bit. Which, right, we're not going to do right now. But, you know, when it comes to Limud Torah, it's a big challenge. When it comes to presentation, and you want children to learn, and you want people to be inspired, but at the same time, you know, you make like a music video with people dancing like crazy, and it's supposed to be like a message about Torah. Like, you know, it doesn't seem like a dignified way to treat the Torah. It seems like a violation of this Gemara. Then when Torah is taught, yeah, you want to make it relatable, and you want to make it something that's inspirational, but at the same time, there has to be certain boundaries. There has to be a certain way that it's taught in a dignified manner with a tremendous kavod. Challenge. I'm Rabbi Lazar, Gadalai Sitzdaka, Yaisim Mikala Karbanos. One who does righteousness, justice, that is greater than all the Karbanos. Karbanos, you'd expect, would be pretty big on the list of priorities, you know, Karbanos Hashem. So to say that justice is even greater than that is a bold statement. Shenemar, Sitzdaka, Mishpat, Nivchal Hashem, Mizevach. To do justice, to do righteousness and justice, is more chosen to Hashem, is more fresh, more special, more choice to Hashem than a zevach, than a karban. So straightforward pasuk. Remember, Bilas a gedolim is chasadim, yasim and tzedakah, and gemilus chasadim is even greater than that, because gemilus chasadim is greater than tzedakah. Shneimar zir lachem tzedakah mikitchi lefi chasad, that you're supposed to plant seeds that have to do with tzedakah and harvest according to chesed. Im Adam Zareya, if all the person is doing is seeds, planting seeds, that's how tzedakah is referred to, that the tzedakah is called the planting of the seeds. So you never know if the seeds are gonna grow. You know that kid Harold and a purple crayon? You know they made that other one with him that he planted like a seed? Isn't that one who grows like, you know, it's not gonna grow. His big brother told him it's not gonna grow. You know that book I'm talking about? No. Anyway, it grew. It grew, yeah. So it all, you know, it's how much you care and you water it and you're dedicated. Anyway, but when a person plants the seeds, you're never sure if it's going to grow. But if you harvest it, certainly you're going to be able to eat it. I mean, at least it's available to be eaten. So what's more available in terms of reward, in terms of schar? So if a person does the righteousness, so then, okay, you know, what it's going to be in the end, we don't know. It sounds like the schar is a little bit shaky. But when it comes to the harvesting, the schar, the reward, so certainly there's reward for chesed. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, in tztaka mishtalem esel lefi chesed. And the tztaka itself is only paid back according to the chesed that was involved in the tztaka. In other words, we're familiar with the Rambam's 10 levels of tztaka, right? That the worst thing you can do while still being stuck on is like you see the onion in the street and you throw the quarter on the floor and make them go pick it up, you know. Here you go. And the higher the tzedakah is, well, how much was it a chesed? How much did you give the person his dignity along with the tzedakah? Highest level tzedakah is to
give him a job.
Because then you're not just giving him charity, you're giving him a way to have dignity and to make a parnasa. So the tzedakah is paid back according to the chesed shebach, that's in it. Shenemar, zira lechem tzedakah, v'kitzul v'chesed, same pasuk, that the seeds is the seed tzedakah, but the harvesting is the degree to which it was done with chesed. Taner rabbanan, b'shash dvarim, gedolus gedolah gemilus chesedim yetzim at tzedakah. In three ways, gemilus chesedim is greater than tzedakah. Tzedakah, number one, tzedakah b'mamoinon, tzedakah is done with money. Gemilus chasadim ben megufu ben bamamoinon. But gemilus chesed can be done even without any money. You imagine a person comes to you and he needs money, but you don't have any. So you can't do tzedakah. Can you do chesed? Yeah, you bring him in, you make him feel good, you talk to him, make him feel like a person, you give him some dignity, sit down, you know, I'm sorry I can't help you, but you know, what's going on? How's your life? It's sudden. You listen to him, tell a story. Even that makes a person feel better. He was able to tell a story. Tzedakah da'aniyim. And similarly, but the second point, tzedakah can only be done for the poor. They need tzedakah. But gemilus chasadim doesn't have to be a poor person. Gemilus chasadim can be even for a person that's wealthy, bein lashir, only in lashir. Whether it's with money or not with money, it's a different idea. It's helping people, it's showing them chasad, doing chasad for them. Doesn't have to be poor. Tzedakah lachayim. Stuck can only be done to people that are alive. And gemilus chesed can even be done for a person who's no longer alive. What do we call that? Chesed shal emes. And even a person longer in the world, still a chesed can be done for them. Where a person, call all who do tztaka and mishpat, righteousness and justice, it's as if they fill the entire world with chesed. That a person who loves tzedakah and mishpat and justice, so as a result, chesed Hashem malah haaretz. Hashem fills the world with chesed as a result of what he did. It gives you the impression that, you know, when we do things that are right in the world, it just brings a tremendous energy. The whole world becomes a place of greater chesed. You know, you could explain that in a very tangible way, that because every time a person does something good for someone else, then they do something good for someone else. Right, Pesach Kron, you guys have all heard of, right? You've heard his stories of Shirin. So when he was young, his father, who was also a mohel, did brisin, his father died when he was pretty young, and he was the oldest boy. And so before his father died, he was trying to train him, you know, to do bris milah, but who's going to get a, you know, a kid, I don't know, he's a teenager, who's going to hire a kid to do bris milah, you know what I mean? So they were struggling financially, but I guess they made ends meet, however they needed his mother, whatever. So a fellow came up to him one day and said, you know, I have something for you. And he gave him $1,500. And he was in like this, I forgot, it was 67, it was a 67, I don't know, it was many, many years ago, and that was a significant amount of money. And so he said, I can't take it, we're not taking tzedakah, you know. So he said, no, I'm giving this to you, talk to your mother. He worked out with the mother and him, whatever the deal was, this is not tzedakah, this is a loan. But the catch is, you can pay back whenever you're able to pay back, you know. Whenever it is, you'll pay me back. So sure enough, years and years and years later, they got enough money together that they went to pay back the loan. So he made an appointment with this fellow in his office, and he went to his office with, you know, this envelope, so proud of himself, you know, here we are, Baruch Hashem, able to repay your $1,500. And the guy told him, absolutely no way am I taking this back. He said, so that was the deal. It wasn't tzedakah. We weren't taking tzedakah. It was a loan, so I'm paying it back. He's like, you know why I gave you that loan? No. Years ago, I was having financial difficulties, and somebody came to me and he said, I'm giving you $1,500. I told him I'm not taking tzedakah. And he said, it's a loan. So he said, okay, thank you very much. Pay back whenever you can. So I got the money together eventually and I went to pay him back. And when I went to pay it back, you know what he told me? Absolutely not. He said, but it was a loan. And he said, that's right. You take that money that you're paying me back and you give it to somebody else that you think needs it. And that's how you're going to pay me back. And that's what I want you to do. So that's Rabbi Kron said they got together, him and his mother, and they found another family that needed the $1,500. And they told them, this is a loan whenever you get the money back. And that continued to be a chain, you know, of people that loaned somebody $1,500. And then the payback was you have to loan it to somebody else when you get the money together. Beautiful thing. So that's, you know, the tangible way to look at it is Malar's, you know, Chesed, Hashem, Malah Haaretz, said it just makes other people do good as well. But it could also be that there's just an energy, you know, there's an energy that we don't always understand. And when people do good things, it make good things happen to the world in ways that we can't. It's not always tangible. But it's just a spirit of chesed comes to the world too. So lest a person say, okay, you know, it's so easy to go ahead and do chesed. Kofetz is like a kfitza, means like a jump, you know. So maybe it's easy to just jump and do a chesed. Tamad loymer mayakar chastecha likim. That it's very precious. Chesed Hashem is very precious. So what? So apparently it's not so easy to really do. Because sometimes you have people that come up to you, like the guy that came up to me years ago in Washington Heights and said, oh, I forgot my wallet at home, I need this, I need that. And the guy was a fraud. And then eventually you can look him up on YouTube and he's just one of these guys, you know. So lest you think it's so easy to do a chesed, there are plenty of people out there that don't need the chesed too. It's very precious to Hashem when a real chesed is done. It's not so simple. Yachal af yirishamayim, okay? Maybe it's that way also for a person really as yirishamayim. Maybe he ends up not really doing a chesed. Taman lamer b'chesed Hashem ayolam adolam al yireyav. No, when it comes to people who really have yirishamayim, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides them with people that really need it, and so they have an easier time doing chesed than a person that doesn't have yirishamayim. If you find a person that has chayin, what's chayin? Sometimes there are people you meet that they just feel so special to you. You know they're not fakers. You know they're just, and like, you know, they're very sincere and have like a smile and like everyone likes them. They're just certain people out there. They're just like everybody likes them. They're just really nice people. They have a chayin, they have a grace, you know? They have a chayin to them. So anytime you find a person that has some kind of chayin, biyadua shehu yorei shamayim, You should know that that's a result of some kind of Yiras Shamayim. Shenemar chesed Hashem me'olam v'ad olam al yireyav. That there's this chesed that's always surrounding yireyav, a person that has fear of Hashem. So on the one hand, it's easier for a person that has Yiras Shamayim to do real, legitimate chesed. On the other hand, a person that has Yiras Shamayim also is surrounded by chesed. There's like a certain sense of chayin that surrounds him. Vam Rabbi Elazar. My dichse was, I mean, the pasuk says, Pia pascha b'chachma, v'seres chesed al shayna. Where is that written? Where is that from? Pia pascha b'chachma, esh eschael. Where is that? Mishlei, excellent. It's in Mishlei. Who wrote Mishlei? Shlomo HaMelech. So what does it mean? Pia pascha b'chachma, her pia, her mouth, pascha, open b'chachma. So when she opens her mouth, wisdom comes out. V'teras chesed, the Torah of Chesed al Lashina is on her tongue. So there's wisdom in her mouth and Torah on her tongue. But it's not just Torah. It's what kind of Torah? Torah's Chesed. V'chiyesh Torah shal Chesed v'yesh Torah shayna shal Chesed. Where you think there's Torah that's Chesed and Torah's not Chesed? What's Torah that's not Chesed? All Torah is Chesed. Torah is Torah. That's Hashem's Torah. Of course it comes along with Chesed. What does that mean? So Gemara says, interestingly enough, when a person learns Torah without any reason for doing it, he's doing it because he wants to know the MS. He learns it's Hashem's Torah, Lishma. As opposed to what? As opposed to Torah Sheina Lishma. That a person, you know, he wants to get smichas, he wants to learn, he wants to impress people, so he learns Torah. You know, it's not bad. A person is supposed to learn Torah, even Shalo Lishma. Shemitok Shalo Lishma, Ba Lishma. Sometimes that's just how we get to the place. Sometimes it's the only way to do it. Maybe it's always the only way to do it. We're all human, after all, most of us. So that's how you get from one place to another. Shalo Lishma, that's okay. But nonetheless, even though the way you get to Lishma is with ulterior motives, but real Torah, Shal Chesed, is Torah Lishma. Ela Torah Lishma is the Torah Shal Chesed. Shalo Lishma is the Torah Sheina Shal Chesed. Shalo Lishma, it's not considered Torah Shal Chesed. Why? So one reason is because what it does to the world, you know, the impact it has on the world. When a person learns Torah Lishma, it has a tremendous impact on the world. If it's not Lishma, it doesn't have the same kind of impact. Ike de Amri, those that say a different pshat. Torah Lelamida, when a person learns Torah in order to teach it to others, he's not just doing it for himself. He wants to learn it because he wants to share his Torah. Zui Torah Shel Chesed. Oh, makes a lot of sense. That's called Torah Shel Chesed, because he's not for himself. He's learning Torah intentionally, because he wants to share it with others. That's Torah of Chesed. Shalalamda, but if it's not to teach it, he just wants to know it for himself. Say Torah Sheina Shel Chesed. That's Torah, but it's not a Torah of Chesed. Okay, so that's the whole Gemara of Agadah. There's a lot more to talk about. You can pick apart each one of those and give drushes and drushes and drushes on it and applications to life, and we could spend a lot of time on it. But that's the Agadah. So back to our Mishnah. So the Mishnah told us, "Kamaseu b'chol kachmayaseu b'Shabbos," that just like when they did the Nisur Chamayim, when it was a weekday, very similar, they did it on Shabbos as well. What was the issue? So if you remember, where did they get the water from when they did the Nisur Chamayim? The Shiloach. They had to go down to this Shiloach spring, and they would draw the water from there, and they would bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. And it didn't have to sit anywhere, because they were going to use it right away. But if it's Shabbos, one of those things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos is carrying. So how do you get the water from the Shiloach? So if it had to come from the Shiloach, and it had to be done on that day, then we would do it anyway. But since it's not the case, you could always get it from another place, as we'll see. You're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. So what they would do is, they filled it up in a vessel that was not a Hekdesh vessel, because if it were a Hekdesh vessel, then it would invalidate the water by sitting overnight. So they had to get it in a non-Hekdesh vessel, and they would bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and then they would pour it into a Hekdesh vessel the next day when they were going to use it. So the Gemara says, why do you have to bring it in a vessel that does not have Kiddushas Mikdash? Why? Naisi, bring it b'mikudeshes, in a vessel that has Kiddusha. What's the problem? Rashi writes, four lines up from the bottom. In other words, what's bothering the Gemara, right? Rashi says, "Dekasalka daite," because at this point we're assuming, "Eina kli mekadishan kedushas aguf lifsol belina," that the vessel that we're putting the water into doesn't give it any kedusha to the object itself, and it shouldn't become pusle if it just sits in it overnight. Unless he has in mind that the kli should be makadesh the water. In other words, the assumption at this point is that intention is critical. If you want this vessel to make the water kadosh water, so then it will. But if you don't have it in mind, then it won't. So what's the difference what kli you put it in? It's not just a reality, it depends on your kavana. So Gemara says, Amar Zairi said, Kasavra in shir lamayim. But the assumption is that there's no amount that you have to pour on to the Mizbeach. Viklisharis mekadshan lemidas. And a vessel that belongs to the Mikdash, a hektish vessel, makes things kadosh even without knowledge, even without your kavanah. Rashi writes, "In shir lamayim," two lines up from the bottom. Shafilu yoyser mishloisha lugyan ui and lenaseich. That if there's no amount, that means that even more than three lugim, you could technically use. You know, you can imagine pouring a bucket of water in the mizbeach. Okay, but whatever. You know, if there's no specific amount, the Torah says, so you could do the whole thing. The lo pirsha ben Torah shiura, because the Torah never spells out how much, because the Torah never spells out anything about nisuch hamayim. So therefore, all the water that's in this container theoretically is good for the nisuch hamayim. If that's true, the kli miyad makadsha, and so the kli is going to immediately be makadesh all of it because it's all possible to be used. Kol anegev hamikdash tefilin aroitz shikadesh ad machar, and even this is the second assumption, and even if, which is, of course, the intention, you don't want it to be kadosh until the next day because you don't need it until tomorrow. Remember, you're drawing the water before Shabbos. You're not going to pour it on the Mizbeach until Shabbos morning. Nonetheless, the kli mekadosh and the yad shel midas. The kli, if it's kadosh, will give it kedusha, give the water kedusha right away, even without your intention. So therefore, if you would put the water into a kli that is has kedusha, that's hekdesh, if suluhu belina, it would become puzzle once it sits overnight. That's just a rule. Rashi writes, "Hoyo v'iskadosh kedusha zaguf." Since the water would gain kedusha, right? It would be like meila water, right? You're not allowed to drink it or use that would benefit from the water. It would be meila because it gains kedusha. Havlu kimri korban. It's like anything else, like leftovers of a korban. You know, they become problematic. You can't do anything with them once they sit out overnight. Okay, so you have to use a non-kadosh kli, so that way the water is not kadosh. If the water is not kadosh, then it can sit in the Beis HaMikdash as long as it's covered, and that's no problem. Chizkiya amar kli shareis ein mekadshan elamidas. Chizkiya disagreed with that, and said a kli shareis, a vessel of service, only makes something kadosh if you have intention for it. Oh, well, so what's the problem? So then just put it in a kli shareis, and don't intend that it should become kadosh. Why can't you do that? Why do you have to do this fancy footwork and make sure you're using a kli that doesn't have kedusha? So he answers differently, and he says it's a gzeira. It's not a doraisa, which is what we just said. It's just a gzeira midrabana. Shema yomru ladas niskadshu. Because we're afraid people are going to think, oh, wow, they filled this up to use it for nisuch hamayim. Obviously, they wanted it to be kadosh because it has to be by the time they pour it on the mizbeach. So, what's going on? How come they let it sit out overnight? Oh, I guess things that sit out overnight are really okay. And that's really not true. That's a problem. That passes the water. So we don't want people making mistakes. So we made a gzeira so that nobody makes a mistake. I'm Rabbi Yonatan Rabbi Zeira. If you go to Tama Yeshir Lamayim, you can even say that the only water for Nisach Lamayim is three lugin. And if you fill up a huge barrel full, then it's not going to become kadosh because not all that water is for the purpose. That's a good question. Someone's got to Google this. Okay, so 3 liters? I don't know. You got to figure out how many liters it is, but just for our own visual, it's a pitcher full. When you get it, let me know. You could even say that there is an amount, 3 lugin, that you need to pour on the mizbeach, and that's it. So if you have a barrel full of water, it's not going to become kadosh, because it's too much. So then what's the problem? V'klisharis in mekachan, and therefore, and a klisharis won't be mekadosh it, therefore. Ela midas, unless a person actually has intention to be mekadosh it. So then what in the world is a problem over here? Put it in a klisharis, fill it up with too much water, and don't have kavana that it should become kadosh, and you don't have any problems. See, it's a different gzera. V'gzera shem yomru, l'kinu shedayim raglayim mal'an. Maybe he filled it up for the kohanim to wash their hands and feet. Oh, well, if they filled it up to wash their hands and feet, and it sat all night, oh, well, I guess water that has kedusha can sit all night. It's not a problem. So it goes back to the same problem. People will think that things that are kadosh that sit out all night, you can still do whatever you need to do it with, and that's puzzled on the mizbeach, it's puzzled to use. So that would be a big mistake. We don't want anyone to make such a mistake. Okay. Nishpicha oinis kalsa. Let's say that that water that was sitting there Friday night got poured out, or it became revealed. What do you mean it became revealed? That it sat out open for a certain amount of time. The omai, why? What's the problem? And what did the Mishnah say? Do you remember? Then you can't use it anymore. It's pasul, and now you have to use water from the kior. The omai, why? Yavim misanenes. Why don't you just pass it through a strainer? Now, how exactly do you do that? Well, what's going on in the Gemara? Let's start with that.
They're saying that it probably eliminates the poison that could have been okay. Possibly...
So the problem is we're assuming that maybe a snake came in and a snake started drinking from the water, and as unlikely as it seems to us, Bizman Azeh, maybe these venomous snakes, we're not talking about constrictors, we're talking about the venomous snakes, that when in the process of drinking, somehow it got some venom into it, called eris. It got some venom into the water. And now, when you go to pour your 3 lugin, it ain't going to be 3 lugin, because guess what's in it? Venom. And that doesn't count as water.
Where's the cure for the water?
Where's the, why isn't it sitting out overnight?
No, where's the cure? You said you use a cure instead.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's what you meant, right? Isn't it sitting out all night?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was originally a big problem. They would have to refill it every day. So what they did was, there was a fellow, this is the Mishnah described this, that came up with a mechanism. And they would lower it into the ground, because there was this underground stream. And it would contact the underground stream, and then it would, like a mikvah almost, it would be matayer, the water, from the any psu alina. No, so here the Gemara says that if it's uncovered overnight, then it's a problem of snakes, and as we'll see, maybe some other issues of kavod as well.
We know the same thing now.
Nowadays, some people still maintain this minig where if they leave something out overnight, they won't drink from it. But since there aren't too many venomous snakes in people's houses, certainly not in the United States of America, it doesn't really seem to be a concern. Not so much it was a dindarabanan as much as it seems it was a rule mishum sakana. So Bizman is that, it all depends on the reality. What? Because of snakes. Maybe, other reasons. But that,
he says that
have what? It could, but the Shiloh is too far away. You couldn't carry it from the Shiloh. What? Have you been there, Shiloh? You can go there, Bizman is that. It's near David. They carved it from both directions at the same time and met in the middle. No? Yeah, you can still go. It's near David. A lot of yeshivas take the guys to. How many of you have been to the Shiloh?
I was there in Shiloh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Shachtamayim
b'sasun.
The same
thing with onion also, bro. Onion was left out of
my... Oh, yeah. No, there are other things of ruach ra. Onions and peeled eggs. Peeled onions, peeled eggs. There are things that are considered to be a danger. What? Yeah, that's something else. Right? That's heebie-jeebies.
Oh,
it's different.
Well, I found out how much it is.
Yeah.
It's about 0.305 liters.
Each lug is 0.305 liters. So yeah. Shlosh lugin is still less than a liter.
Yeah, three. Zero, three, three, three. Times three. How much?
9. It's like just
a little. Okay.
Does that make sense?
9. About 9 times. Yeah. How beautiful.
I thought it was going to be more than like a gallon. I thought it was a big amount. I didn't know it was such a small amount.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay, so Gemara says, so the problem of leaving the water out overnight is that maybe there's snake venom in it, and then when you pour it on the Mizbeach, you're not going to be pouring through 3 lugin of water, you're going to be pouring some less than 3 lugin and some snake venom, and you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah. So Gemara says, what's the big deal? Just strain it. So how do you strain it? So the answer is apparently, I've never done this, that the snake venom has greater viscosity than the water, and so if you have a very, very thin strainer, so then it'll keep the snake venom in, the water will pass through. So you experiment with this. So Gemara says, why can't you just do that? So say that our mission is not like Rabbi Nechemia. Because Rabbi Nechemia, the Tanakhama says that a strainer, you still have a problem of gilui. When do you have a problem with gilui with a strainer? When the bottom one is open, even if the upper one is revealed, it's still not a problem. What is going on here? So I think the basic seer, maybe you have a different, maybe he explains it in English over there, but it seems that to me, the basic picture over here is that in order to strain it, you're going to have to use a very, very fine strainer. What does that mean, a fine strainer? We're not straining noodles over here. We're straining venom out of water. So it's going to be dripping for a very long time. You're talking about a very thin strainer that's going to allow drip, 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 drip. That's going to take a long time. So the question is, if you take whatever this filter is going to be, and you put it on top of a bucket, a barrel, a pitcher, whatever it's going to be that we're straining into, it's not covered because there's a strainer there. That's the only... It can't be covered. That's the whole point. It's got to drip, 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 drip into the bottom clay. And it's going to take a long time. So that's the machlokas here. So do you say that you didn't solve the problem because at the end of the day it's not covered? Well, then you can't solve the problem. Or do you say, no, you got to cover the top one so no additional venom comes in? So let's read it again. So maybe... So the Gemara asks, basically, why can't you just use a strain? Why can't you use a filter? So maybe it's not like Rabbi Nechemia. Because the Brisa says, Misanenes yesh mishum gilui, that the starting point is that you're not allowed to use a strainer because it's still going to be a problem of gilui. You can't solve the problem. Why can't you solve the problem? Does Rashi say? Rashi says, yesh mishum gilui. If you left it dripping, filtering, in the amount of time that it would be problematic without anybody watching it for snakes, so who knows you're really preventing? How do you know you're really preventing it from being a problem again? So you can't solve the problem unless you're actually watching it. When's it a problem? Even if nobody's watching it, but if it's filtering, so if the bottom one is open, so then you're right, you got a problem. But as long as somehow you're keeping the bottom one covered, I guess the only thing that's there is the filter, even though the top one is still open, and maybe snake put more venom in, it's filtering, so what's the problem? So it's okay, so according to Rabbi Nechemia, why can't you do that? So it must be that our mission is not like Rabbi Nechemia, because if it was like Rabbi Nechemia, it's still filtered. What's the problem? My answer is, because the venom of a snake is like a sponge. It's like a tzafa, that it kind of floats to the surface and stays there. It's less dense than water. So that's a problem. If you tame Rabbi Nechemia, no, maybe you could work out the mission even according to Rabbi Nechemia. Imar dam Rabbi Nechemia, when Rabbi Nechemia say that you can just strain it and you're good to go, lehedyot, That's if it's talking about you want to drink it. Aval legavoya, but to bring on the mizbeach, miyamar, whoever said such a thing. In other words, it's not an issue of drinkability and making sure that you can get rid of the venom satisfactorily. That would be an issue that lehedyoit. Okay, if you want to serve it, you got to make sure you filter it properly, and then we're not worried that there's going to be any venom, and that's a health thing. But when it comes to actually using it for the mizbeach, it's not right. It's got snake venom in it, you know? Not necessarily that we're concerned to the shiurim, because you can filter it out. So it will have the amount that you need. We filter it out. But even though you filter it out and you have the right amount of water, pasnisht, you can't use that for the mizbeach. It has to be with kavod. It has to be nicer. The less layer of Nechemia, Kivu, no, Lefechazecha, Yitzach, Yisipanecha, Amar Hashem, Tzivakais. So the Gemara finishes by saying, I guess of course it's true. In other words, if you would say that Rabbi Nechemi would allow you to bring it on the Mizbeach, then he would be disregarding the pasuk that says v'chisasiku pisach v'chol einra. If you, let's say you have an animal that's has a mum, akriveyu na l'fechasecha, and you want to go ahead and bring it on the Mizbeach, would you bring, so pechasecha means like a, I don't know in normal English, a nobleman. What do you say? No, a respectable person, bisman hazeh. Okay, he's a respectable person, bisman hazeh, right? Would you serve somebody that, a respectable person, at your table? Would he appreciate that? Amr Hashem Tzvaga, so says Hashem. Even though technically you can remove the venom and it wouldn't be a technical problem, you still have enough water there, it wouldn't be a problem in the amount, but nonetheless, would you do that for a respectable person? Not in a million years. He wouldn't think very nicely of you if you did that. So therefore, you can't do that when it comes to Mizbeach of Hashem. Either Hadran Allah Lula Ve'arava. Hey, la 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 la